Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 28 of Could It Be Podcast. Today we're sharing part two of Cindy's story. So if you haven't listened to episode 20 yet, which is where Cindy joins us before her explant surgery, jump on over and have a listen to that first. Today she gives a bit of an update on how she's been going since her explant on the 6th of February this year. In some super exciting news, both Cindy and I were approached to share our experiences with self-image when it comes to cosmetic surgery in the most recent Marie Claire magazine. I now have learnt that it's Marie and not Marie. So if you're in Australia, here's one I prepared earlier. This is the June issue of Marie Claire magazine, and it's on page 64. So if you jump in, there's the article, which is Your Body is Not a Trend. So both Cindy and I are referred to in that article. I'm right at the end, just sharing a bit of a insight into, you know, the fact that at the end of the day, it's not your boobs that really define you as a person. So if you haven't grabbed that, if you're in Australia, grab the article. I haven't seen it online yet. I've just seen it in print. But yeah, we both talked briefly about that in the episode today. That's about all from me. So we'll jump into today's episode. Enjoy part two of Cindy's story.
So how you feeling? How are you going?
I'm good. How are you feeling, Miss Marie Claire?
Feeling a bit like famous, you know.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I had family go out and buy the magazine after I posted about it and like share it on social media, which is really sweet.
Oh, that's so nice when you've got that support. Yeah, it's definitely been a journey for me, this magazine.
Did you end up doing the interview on the phone or?
No, I wrote it. I wrote an essay. I'm a writer. That's what I do. I love writing. I can take my time and I can poetically articulate what I'm trying to say. So I wrote about six and pages.
That's amazing. I probably wrote more than I thought I would. And then, you know, with my partner being a teacher, I got him to look over it and he made it sound even better. And then, like, you know, not all of it makes its way to the article, but yeah, it was a big, like, you know, took a while to put it together. And I got the email from Robin as I was about to fly home to Australia, and like it was, you know, 11:30 at night in San Francisco, and I get this email. I couldn't even get the words out. Jacob, I'm like, read this. Like, I can't say it. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah, it's lovely. And it's, you know, it's a keepsake and it's something that you can always sort of be proud of, to shine that light on such an important issue. Yeah, we brought a couple of copies. I was actually got a text message off a friend this morning and he's like, I went in, I'm real blokey and I brought the most feminine magazine ever, but I don't care. I was like, that's really nice. It's really nice. Yeah.
And there was another article that you shared. I think that was more of an online one that you've been in recently.
Yeah.
How did that one come about?
Wellness. I actually reached out to them. I was like, breast implant illness. I've got a story. Let's collaborate. Let's work on this. And they actually reached back out and said, yeah, let's do this. I had another publication respond as well, but that hasn't come to fruition at the moment, but the House of Wellness did, so that was a lovely opportunity. And that was specifically about breast implant illness and the side effects, where Marie Claire was about self-image. So I didn't realize that Marie Claire was going to go down that avenue, so I had to wrap my head around that first, and I was like, oh, and then I was like, okay, yes, there's many layers, let's get across all of it. Yeah.
The one thing that I really liked about the Marie Claire magazine, I never know whether to say it Marie or Marie. Anyway, Marie. The fact that they still mentioned BII, even though it was such a focus on self-image, that's a big step forward in this whole thing, I think.
Yeah, for mainstream media. Yeah, I agree. I know their focus was, if you lack confidence, you're going to go and do this, which is very much part of my story. and needs a light shone upon that as well, and is actually what I focus on in my coaching sessions, is I am not enoughness. So it was very relevant.
With Marie Claire, I didn't realize that I hadn't told my family about it, and it wasn't that I was hiding it. I think there's this part of me that builds up the preparation for something not going ahead or something not going well, and that probably stems back to all of the other surgeries I've had and the potential bad outcome of them. But like my younger sister, who I'm really close with, we've done an episode together and I tell her everything. Like, she commented when I put the post up on social media, she's like, oh my god, Bianca. I'm like, oh, whoops, I didn't tell you. Awkward. And yeah, my mum messaged me, she's like, oh, your other sister Sam has bought, she's currently reading about you in this magazine. I'm like, oh, I didn't tell anybody. Whoops. Like, there was a couple of people that were around me at the time that I told, but yeah, whoops.
Yeah.
Now they know.
But that happens. Like, we're not putting ourselves on a platform and letting everybody know our blow by blow. So yeah, that's absolutely understandable. I'm sure there's people that have learned a lot about me, and a lot of people might find what was written in there confronting, actually. So yeah. And because I did very much emphasize on my insecurities in that article. So I was like, yeah, cool. I was totally insecure. Yes, I got breast implants for medical reasons. The article very much highlighted insecurity reasons, but it all works together. It all works in unison. So
like with your mindset coaching, has that helped you with handling all of the feelings behind the article?
Yeah, when it's you, it's a lot harder to navigate than if I'm helping somebody else. When I'm helping someone else, it is clear as crystal. I can see my way to the other side. When it's yourself, you're like, oof. And so thank goodness I have my husband, who was able to just help me navigate. But yeah, essentially, I just really try to take a step back, look down upon myself and see it from a different perspective. So it takes myself out of it. I'm able to see a lot clearer. But I'm like, this is the stuff I help people with. So let's help myself.
Like, what else? What else has been happening?
So since I last spoke to you, I had my explant surgery on the 6th of February, and I went in super hyped. They were all looking at me like, what is this girl on? Like, the doctors and nurses were like, are you ready? Because they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm here to party, let's do this. And they're like, okie dokie. Anyways, I'm not good on anesthetic. Me and anesthetic are not friends, especially if the person doesn't really get it right. There's been some, I can't even pronounce anesthetic, they've got the formula. Anesthetist. Yes, that's it, anesthetist. They've got the formula just right for me in the past, and I haven't had a bad reaction, but this one was not great. He came in the next morning and he goes, and I warned him, I'm like, me and Anne, and he goes, oh, you'll be fine. I'm like, oh, this is not going to be great. And he comes in the next morning and he goes, there are people in this world that can do anesthetic, and there's people in this world that cannot. And you, my dear, you can't. And I'm like, I warned you. So he had to, like, drug me out because I was a bit of a mess. But honestly, the next day I woke up, so I had it 5 p.m. that night. I pretty much came to 5 a.m. the next morning. And instantly, I know I had a lot of drugs. I had the drip going through me, but instantly I was, the brain fog gone, the chronic fatigue gone, like instantaneous. I could feel it in my head. And I was like, and I bounced out of that bed to go to the toilet like I was a pole vaulter. Like, it was insane. And then at 9 a.m. they took the drugs out of me. So I was only on it from 5 p.m. that night to 9 a.m. the next morning, and then I went drug free. I didn't do anything. I didn't even take the antibiotics. Yep. I did it all without it. I was like, no, I don't want to put more shit in me when I'm trying to get it out of me. And so I crashed pretty bad. But I still felt great in comparison. I knew it was just surgery stuff. It wasn't BII stuff that I was feeling. The anesthetic did affect me. I think I go into like an anesthetic depression. So I was in that for about 2 weeks. Plus I went through change. Like, I had prepared myself in theory for this. I didn't have breasts to fall back on. You got to remember, I had nothing and then was given something, right? There's mm-hmm. not even a bra that's made for me. I literally don't, that's just how I'm rolling. And so in theory, I was prepped for it and I thought I had it under control. I had done my work, my NLP techniques, everything prior to the surgery. And then it was time to do the prac and realize this is what it is and this is how I look like now, and that is completely different to prepping for things. I was actually in it, I was living it, and I was grieving, and I had to go through that process of grieving of what I was, because I liked how I looked. As sick as I was and all that, like, I loved it. And so I loved how it made me feel. Like, I'm not going to deny all that because that is my truth. Mm-hmm. So I was in a grieving process. I had to accept the new version of me, let go of what was. I had to learn to like and love who I was, and I had to redefine my concept of self-love, self-worth and self-image, because prior to the surgery I had thought I had done that, but what I now realize is that I had done it in perfect circumstances. I had loved and worked on myself for who I was, not realizing of that's involved what I looked like at that time. To come over to the other side, I was like, it was based on false pretenses, because I loved and valued myself with breasts without realizing it. And so in redefining that concept, I'm like, well, who am I without physical presence? And it's like, oh, this is deep. I'm working on energy here. And what is my energy? And what are my intentions? What's my purpose? And is that beautiful? What do I do to lift people up without my physical presence? And that really changed for me. And I was able to create, still creating it, but a foundation that is not based on looks, not based on my hair, nothing. And that really set things off in motion for me, for healing. So as well as doing all that, I did a lot of mirror work. I sat in front of a mirror naked and wounded, which was really confronting, because I didn't want to wait to embrace myself. I'll embrace myself when I'm healed. I'll embrace myself. No, I didn't want to live in waiting. I wanted to do it now and love myself at all stages. And so I did a lot of mirror work, and oh my God, I remember the first time I just cried. It was horrendous. And it took a long time. It's taken me till now, and what, I'm 14 weeks out now, but it's taken a long time. I'm still learning. I'm still creating mm-hmm. that solid foundation, but it was something that needed to happen to rock my world, this experience. Without this experience, I would not know the depths of self-image, self-worth, and self-love like I do now. It needed to happen for me to truly grasp this truth and now to teach others about it. And for that, I am super grateful.
To do the mirror work, I look at that as something that's super brave because, like I've mentioned in my episodes, one of my, like, my boobs looked very different. Like, my left one looks fine, my right one was my trauma boob. There was two or three cup sizes difference initially, like when I came out of surgery, and that did improve over time, but until that did improve, I couldn't look at myself. And the mirror in our bathroom is high enough that I can't actually see my, I can see my shoulders, but I can't see my chest, and I was grateful for that. And my way of dealing with it was sweeping it under the rug, like, oh, avoidance. I'm not going to look. I'm going to cover myself up as much as possible. Yeah, total avoidance techniques there.
Yeah.
So to be able to do that mirror work, that's amazing that you could do that. It's very brave.
I've run from things my whole life. I've run and sprinted, and it didn't work. And the past few years, I've learned to step into my fear. And it's hard. It's not easy, but it's better than running. The outcome's completely different. And so, yeah, that's why I did it. Long-term
gain for something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm able to be where I am today because of doing it, you know? So I'm still working on it. I'm not completely there. I've got a little ways to go. But I'm always the client and the coach. And that's what makes a great coach, is when you can coach things that you're going through. And so that's why, like, the other day I put on my Instagram page that I'm ready to coach women who are going through BII or explant surgery, because I feel you. I'm here on the other side. I've had that experience now, still traveling it, but I'm here and I know what needs to be done and I know what's helpful and what's not. And so that's why I did that. But, yeah, I guess it is brave, but it's, to me, I don't have a choice because I've experienced both ends of the spectrum, yeah, and I know what works.
Yeah. With the fact that you put that call out to be able to help women through this journey as well, is that just for people in Australia, like given the time differences, or is that something that you could do for women overseas?
Yeah. I've coached women overseas before, so, yeah, nah, the time difference doesn't matter. It's cool. For anybody that needs it. And you know what? I don't push this stuff because I just let nature take its course, and people who are drawn to me are the right people for me. So, yeah, I definitely don't try and force anything. It's just a natural gravitation between the two of us. So,
beautiful. I'll put some information in the show notes about that just in case anyone who is listening wants to reach out to you as well.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you.
Sweet. One thing that I remember you mentioning on the Instagram was you were asking what other women's experiences were with their cycles.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Do you want to talk us through that? Oh, my gosh. Our experiences are very different. Like, we can both talk to what has happened because it messes with your body big time.
Oh my gosh. It? So, yes, thank you for bringing that up, because most of my symptoms, I'm talking my migraines that I've had since 2013, I get them before and after periods. They have to be prescription based medicated. And if I don't take that specific medication, I end up in hospital with cluster migraines. It is just a whole thing. So I knew they were hormonal, right? Because it was before and end of the period. Never did I think it was my breast implants affecting my hormones, affecting the migraines. I have not had a migraine since I got my implants out. I get headaches. That's so fine. But no migraines. My periods were normal before my explant surgery. So I don't know. once every 28 days, 5 days. The only thing that wasn't normal is it was very painful and some were light, some were heavy, whatever. I come out of the explant surgery and I swear I've basically had my period ever since. So, a week later I got my period. I've been getting them for 7 to 8 days. I am so incredibly heavy. It's like the pain's gone, the migraine's gone. I don't feel my ovaries like I used to. I used to really feel my ovaries. But the heavy, oh my gosh. And I'm getting them every 15 days. So I get it for 8.
Once, 5 days, once every 28 days is enough.
Yeah.
To have it that frequently for that long.
I literally need to take shares out in tampons and pads right now because I am not getting a break. So I know it's my body self-regulating and my hormones like finding their way again, and I'm really trying to help aid in that process. But boy, oh boy, I only get a 15-day break and I'm back on for 7 to 8 days, and it's intense the entire time. It's not like, oh, it's not a bother. It's I have to make sure I've got 45 packs of tampons, 45 packs of pads. Like, it's a whole thing. And it's just intense.
And that's still going now, about
still going. It hasn't stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you do hear that breast implants or the silicone, I don't know the exact science behind it, but they're endocrine disruptors. Can't get that word right.
Yeah, you did so well with that.
Thanks. So it does make sense that our bodies change. Like after having I had the Mirena for nearly 2 years while I had breast implants. I had migraines once I had my implants. They stopped when I had the Mirena. But then about 4 months after my explant, I started spotting all the time. my period when I was on the Mirena was a week or 8 days of spotting. But then that was like, I would have maybe a week every month where I didn't spot.
You
know, I just want to live my life and not be worried about, you know, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I started getting the pelvic pain and I decided to take my Mirena out because obviously there was, I don't know, maybe this rush of hormones because they weren't disrupted anymore and felt great afterwards. But, you know, sort of had my on and off journeys of feeling good and bad again. And I had hormone testing. My hormones are out.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something that my normal GP would do. I had to go to a naturopath
You have to outsource
hormone testing done.
Yeah, and it's out of pocket
definitely.
Too.
And yeah, it was like $460 that I paid for the blood tests. But, you know, how many other appointments would I have paid for? How many specialists would I have seen if I didn't, like, I would have spent more money in the end anyway.
Yeah.
Oh. Have you had any testing done to see yet, or are you sort of waiting for your body to regulate?
Yeah, I'm waiting for my body to regulate, and also too, I was waiting on the clinical study to say, Cindy, it's time to get your bloods done, because I thought they were going to, you know, preempt that. Because honestly, mm-hmm. before my surgery, I was poked and prodded so much. Like I had so many blood tests done. It's crazy, to the point where my GP stopped. She goes, I legally can't give you any more blood tests. So they would have red flagged her or something to do with Medicare, I don't know. But so I haven't had any.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I haven't had any since. So yeah, I'm just basically waiting, and I trust this is all going to smooth out. I came off the pill in like 2008 because I just didn't want to touch my body, right? I haven't done Mirenas, I haven't done anything like that. I'm like, no, let the body be natural. So where I can take control, I will, in not putting shit in my body, to know that this whole time that my breast implants were doing this is, an eye-opener. It was an eye-opener.
Yeah. You mentioned before about the the fact that you used to be able to feel your ovaries like in your cycle and you can't feel that now. I wonder whether an aspect of that would have been that your body was inflamed.
Yes, 100%. The other side effect that has diminished since the surgery is that I was always fluidy around my midsection, especially around my hips and everything, I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, maybe it's a little bit of body fat. Maybe it's a bit of fluid. And, of course, it would fluctuate and whatnot. That's all gone. That is all gone. All the inflammation in my body has gone down. So that was inflammation. I thought it was water retention.
How soon after the surgery?
I almost want to say it was immediately. Like I really haven't had the digestive issues have subsided dramatically. I can now eat a lot more and consume a lot more without bloating than I used to. So, for example, I'm very clean eating. I really try to steer away from gluten and yada, yada, yada. But on the weekends, if I want a piece of naan, I'm going to have a piece of naan. That's all about balance, right? I used to pay for that severely. That one piece of naan, I would pay for that severely, full bloated, the whole thing. No, nothing now.
Naan's always worth it, though.
So worth it.
Well, that's good.
That sweet garlic stuff that's so good. Oh, my gosh. I just rub it on my face. It's amazing. But
I want to roll in it.
I just bathe in it. But,
do you watch Peep Show? Have you ever watched Peep Show?
Peep Show?
Yeah. Oh, it's like an English comedy and there's like, I've been watching it a lot lately and there's a quote where he's like, four naan, Jeremy, four naan. And I'm trying so hard not to say that, but now I've said it, so it's fine.
I'll have to watch it just for that one liner.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're big naan
family. Well, that's really good.
Yeah, so that's subsided and therefore that would obviously go over to the inflammation of my ovaries. So as I said, I used to really feel the left one in particular. That's all subsided now. So there was a lot of inflammation throughout my whole body, the bones, muscles, everywhere.
When we recorded an episode before your explant, you were saying about how bad your back was. Like you had to really prepare yourself once you got up in the mornings. How has that been feeling?
Gone. Yep. So as I said, I literally jumped out of bed to go to my first toilet trip after the surgery, like a pole vaulter. It was insane. I was like, even the nurse was like, holy crap. And then, yeah, it's been great. Like I can, all that has gone, all the pain, all the stiffness, all that chronic arthritic feeling has completely gone. Even when my periods come round, it used to intensify. So that was my warning. I knew my period was coming because it would be so much worse the day before. I don't even get that anymore. Yeah, everything's changed. It is unbelievable. Yeah.
It's really good. Are there any symptoms that you think have stayed around so far?
Yeah, I'm feeling lethargic again. So I checked in on that. So I do a lot of energy work. I'm a Reiki practitioner. Energy is actually my first language. I will suss you out before you speak to me. Like I'm all about energy. There's a thing called muscle testing. I just call it energy testing because I do things differently. So I muscle tested and I picked up that I have foundational supplements that I need to be taking. So I've got four of those, which I've started and I already feel so much better. So it's just about nourishing and nurturing my body through the process of detoxification. Clearly my body's still self-regulating and regenerating. I've still got things in there that needs to come out. And in doing that, I just got to support my body. And at the moment, taking the supplementations and increasing my water intake and things like that is doing that.
Do you want to share those supplements that you're taking for anyone?
Yeah, it's very personal to me. So it's not, you know, it's not you need to go out and do this. It's a very personal experience. But glutamine is, mm-hmm. yep. Taurine is another supplement. They want me super greens. They want me on super greens and collagen, which really surprised me. But I trust in whatever comes through. So, yeah, I was on a marine collagen actually, and then I came off it. So they're just basically giving me confirmation to get back on it. It's really helpful. It's probably just going to help with skin and cell and hair and nail regeneration after being so depleted in that area. And then I'll energy test every 4 weeks and be like, is this still what I need? So the taurine and glutamine I've needed for a very long time. So they are my absolute fundamental foundational supplements. Yeah.
I'm on my own sort of detox journey at the moment, and I think I've got both of those in the powders that I'm taking that the naturopath prescribed for me, and game changer, big time.
Glutamine's a massive game changer, and you'll find it in most supplements actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's actually number one ingredient in my gut powder that I'm taking at the moment, but I take it naturally on its own as well. So I get a couple of doses of that in a day, and you're right, game changer. That was one of the supplements that helped me with my BII symptoms. So as bad as they were when I got on the glutamine, it just really brought down the severity of it.
I remember you saying before the glutamine, you couldn't eat a lot of things and you sort of got down to 49 kilos, and then jumping on the glutamine changed that for you. You're able to eat again. And
yeah, I do think it was, I was on a gut powder, as I said, and I'm back on it again. Because that did happen. I forgot about that. My appetite decreased again, and I stopped eating as much. And yeah, I've got back on all that. But the main ingredient to my gut powder is glutamine, and I didn't realize that until last week. So, and my, guess what? I'm eating a lot more. I've put on weight again, but I feel so much more energetic, which that would have contributed to me feeling lethargic as well. So it was a domino effect.
The more I'm reading in the sort of BII and I guess holistic health world now, my eyes have been open to it, and how much the gut can impact so much more. It can impact your ability to focus. Obviously digestion is, obvious, but all the other things, that hormone health, that's all impacted by your gut health. So
yeah, it's essential.
It's important to get that.
Yeah, it's a central working part to our well-being. It's just important as the brain. So you need to absolutely make that a priority in nourishing and nurturing that to back to full health, and just ensuring that there's always good microbiome or good bacteria in there. Because that is, when that's out of balance, it will have that ripple effect, domino effect onto everything else, including mental and emotional health. It literally, if you are deficient in a mineral or a vitamin, it can actually cause depression. So it is so incredibly important. It's really want to specify that at the end of everything, at the end of every decision, action, everything that we are, everything that we do, it comes down to the value we place on ourselves and the intention and the thoughts and the emotion. If we have an expectation, for example, that this is what happens, bad things happen when I do this, then that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Bad things will always happen when you do this, right? So bringing it back to breast implant illness and things like that and self-image, if we don't create that foundation based on I am enough, we will always be standing on a fragile, cracked foundation that can, how am I trying to say it? When something comes along, we can easily be rocked and fall over. Okay, so for example, you get your implants taken out, all you have to do is see yourself in clothes and not like the look of that, and that is going to open that crack of your foundation up further and longer, and then eventually you'll fall into it. And then some people, which I've seen on socials, they go back to the implant. They know they've had BII, they've had them taken out, but they can't accept themselves for who they are, and so they go back. And because the BII is worth their self-image. And so it's really about creating that stable and sustainable foundation of self-worth, self-image, self-concept, self-love. We have to work on that every day. It's not something that comes easy. We're brought up in a world not to do that. First of all, we're brought up in a world that tries to create disconnection from self. Don't look to yourself to solve your problems. Look to this pill or this person, okay? So we're brought up in a world that tries to disconnect us from ourselves. Then we're brought up in a world that tries to show us that we're not enough and this is what it looks like to be enough. And so we're always confronted with the opposite of what we're trying to achieve. So that's why this work is so incredibly important, because essentially you're coming back home. You're coming back home to yourself. And when you arrive there, you are more self-empowered than you have ever been, and nothing rocks your foundation. And you become so incredibly powerful.
It's really important. Like, and I think I mentioned this in our last episode, that's something that I haven't worked on. I've worked on the physical body, but I haven't worked on the mindset as much still. But it's very important. Because it's confronting. Especially when you see, like, yeah, that's it. And I can absolutely do that in so many aspects of my life. Like, if something is too confronting or where I feel like there's a possibility that I might fail from it, I'm like, oh, I'll just shift it, my, you know, what I'm going to do to something else, because it's the easy way out, because I don't want to face that.
Yeah,
it's your fear of failure for me.
It is fear of failure, which everybody has, but it takes that self-awareness to identify that. But then what do you do after that self-awareness? Do you go, I'm cool with it? Or do you go, not actually, I don't want this anymore, it doesn't serve me? And that's where the courage comes in. And once you take that first step into and face your fear, and then you realize you're stronger than that fear, oh my gosh, you become unstoppable, and it sets you free. It is the most liberating feeling. And when I take my clients through it, they're just in awe. We have to end the session, because at that point they need to digest and process and integrate with what just happened. And they're like, that was amazing. Why don't I feel fearful anymore? And it's such a foreign feeling for them. But my gosh, it's amazing. And that's what I pride myself on. I pride myself on bringing people back home.
What kind of work can people do? You know, what kind of practitioners can they link with? You know, you mentioned NLP and Reiki. What kind of work can people do to get to that point, do you think?
I believe we're all one, right? And it's not about me versus them, us versus them. At the end of the day, we're all one and we need each other. That saying, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to raise everybody. We all need people around us to shine a light on our blind spot and to help us realize, or to show us a new tool or technique or strategy. the most strongest epiphanies and realizations and awarenesses that I have had has come from other people showing me. They've indirectly shone the light on something that I couldn't see. And once I saw it, my world split open. And so, you know, I was this, my first one was sitting in a Buddhist temple up in the mountains here. And I was in a class and there was a monk sitting up on the podium and she was talking about ego. And I wrote a blog about this actually. It was a supermarket experience where she was saying, you know, you walk into a supermarket and you think everyone's looking at you and they're judging you and things like that. So I always assumed ego was, look at me, I'm amazing, I'm fabulous. But she put it in the perspective of ego being everyone's looking at me and hates me and thinks I'm fat and thinks I'm ugly. Right? That's a very me, myself, and I mentality where it's all about me. And that was me. I was so deeply insecure. I would walk into a supermarket and I was convinced that everyone was looking at me but thinking bad about me, not loving me, but thinking bad. And she goes, that is just not reality. There's got half of those people in the supermarket don't even know you exist. They didn't see you. The others might have been looking at you blankly thinking, where's the milk aisle? And everything she said, I was meant to hear in that moment. And with that awareness, fireworks went off. I had realized what I had been doing my whole life. I was like, I would walk into every room and have everyone pinned and judged and criticized the shit out of them for judging and criticizing me. It wasn't the truth. It was my truth. They're not the same thing. And so I felt liberated. I felt like an idiot. I felt like all these emotions at once. It was literally fireworks. It's literally like someone ripped the blindfold off me and I could finally see what I had been doing. And now I could set myself free of that. That was just one experience. So in answering your question, there, first of all, I believe you need the will and the curiosity and the want. If you don't have that, you're not going to get far. If you have that, I feel like you end up drawing in the circumstances and synchronicities to help with you to work through whatever it is it's you're going to work through. Now, I'm all about energy. So Reiki was a natural progression for me. I'm also a quantum coach where I work with energy and I work with meridians and I work with auras and it's a lot more expansive, and that's where that muscle testing and everything comes in. But I also love the mind, so NLP. I love the mind and how you can reframe something from 1982 that was negative into something positive, and it can literally transform you in your present. Oh my God, I just love it. Sorry. Anywho.
Powerful stuff. No. I years ago, I studied Bowen therapy. Like, I was a personal trainer when I was younger, and I remember my cousin was one as well, and he had studied Bowen therapy, so I thought I'd get into it. And part of the studies, we would go along to the different expos, and there were the wellness expos, and yeah, we had all sorts of practitioners there. And another time I went to a women's healing circle, and this is around the time that I was finding out about like infertility issues and stuff. And I was like 27. I was quite young. And the Reiki practitioner there, like, it was just a very quick, you know, we were doing mindfulness coloring in this, you know, picture, and she would come around and spend 5 minutes with each person. And in that 5 minutes, she's like, you need to learn to love yourself again. And it wasn't until she said that I realized that I hated myself for what my body was doing. And none of it was my fault. Like, I wasn't causing my body to grow these ovarian cysts. Like, you know, I wasn't causing endometriosis. You know, there's possibly some lifestyle changes that can help with them. But, you know, this was stuff that was just happening to my body just naturally, and I hated myself for it. And that was a big turning point. And you know, that was one of my friends went to this woman as a massage client, and she was like, hey, do you want to come along to this? And she just caught me on a day where I was like, yes, I'll try something new. Like, I'd love to come along. And, you know, obviously this all lined up how it was supposed to and when it was supposed to. And that was a huge turning point, because I was like, oh, I hate myself. Like, why do I hate myself? I've not caused this to happen to me. What, like, how can I sort of reframe my way of thinking? And it was like, okay, I might not be able to have kids, but I can still have a great life. I can still have a home that I want to come home to and I enjoy being in. I can, you know, focus on my career and make that something that's enjoyable. You know, I can be the crazy auntie that, you know, is a bad influence and, you know, the one that buys the kids something all the time whenever I see them, like, Auntie B, buy me this. You know, and, yeah, that all happened when it was supposed to. So I completely understand what you're saying, that, like, basically that it'll come to you when it's supposed to, I guess.
Yeah, life is 100% about timing. And I know that for anyone listening, they're probably going, well, so what do I do, just sit here and wait? No, you got to consciously, intentionally make a decision and go, I want change. And then find out where you want that change. And then actively take action to create that change. And with that, it will be law of attraction. Synchronicities will happen. There will, something will come across your Instagram or Facebook, or you'll end up talking to someone. They'll be like, I met this person who blah, blah, blah. And it ends up sort of cross-referencing with you. And that's how it happens. I can't explain it, but that's literally how it happens. You can talk to hundreds of people, they'll tell you that. But you need to take action for those synchronicities to occur. It's not just wishful thinking. Can I come to you for a minute? You can get this out. Yeah. You can edit this out. So with you, I feel that you've got a disconnection to your body. And so it's a you versus your body, right? Until you harmonize that and become one with your body and who you are, you will continue down this me versus my body mentality, where you don't feel like you've got a connection or a relationship with it, and that it lets you down. That is not the truth. It is only your truth. The truth is that your body loves you and wants to do good for you. And the things that happen usually have an emotional cause behind it. There's an emotional cause that triggers off the physical symptom. So what happens with emotion is they become unprocessed and they get stuck in your body. So your hate for your body, I know you said I've accepted it, but I know you haven't, right? And so what happens?
I feel so seen right now.
Sorry, do you want me to keep going?
No, you're a magician. No, that's fine. Like, go for it, because it's yeah, it's definitely, it's all 100%.
Yeah.
On the money.
And so what happens is that hate for your body, I'm just going to use that as an example, it's unprocessed emotion. And what happens to unprocessed emotion? It stores in your body and it gets stronger and stronger with every physical ailment that comes up for you. That hate anchors deeper into that body and becomes more unprocessed. So it grows in volume and intensity over time until it becomes a physical ailment. It becomes endometriosis. It becomes a cyst, right? There is an emotional cause to every physical ailment. When you go to the doctor and you present pain in your chest, the question they ask you is, how much stress have you been under lately? Stress is an emotion that causes a physical ailment such as heart attacks. So for some reason, the GPs are happy to admit that. So I'll take it as a win. So that's what's happening with you. Okay. You've got a disconnect with your body and you're not connected with it. You're angry with it and you have a self-fulfilling prophecy with it where you are going to let me down. And so that's all you see from your body. But rather, instead of saying you're going to let me down, you need to be changing the narrative to what are you showing me? What do I need to know? And you're going to get a different response. I tell you right now that everything that's going on has got to do with your disconnection and your hate for your body. It just keeps manifesting through physical stuff. So until you find peace and unity with yourself, your body is you, it's going to continue.
For me, I think that's kind of glued together some of the, I'm not very good at wording this kind of thing, but the weight gain that I have been experiencing probably over the last few years, but so much since my explant and the IUD being taken out, there's like, I know it's a problem because of the physical impacts it may have on me later on, like, you know, the risk of diabetes, the risk of stroke, the risk of heart disease. But then there's this emotional disconnect, I think, that I've created to, and that comes back down to my way of trying to deal with things, to push it to the side. So it's like, if I don't see myself, if I don't look at myself and I disconnect the weight gain from the way I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm making sense, but then I'll be able to kind of just keep going through life, you know, taking that easy way of thinking. So that makes 100% sense. Like, I felt like there was something missing in that, but I don't have the knowledge to know what that disconnect was.
Yeah.
So I think I need to work with you.
Yeah. Sign right up, baby. I'm ready to go when you are.
Yep.
But yeah, it's that ignorance is bliss mentality. But it is. There's a point in your life where you turned on your body. Your body didn't turn on you. You turned on it, and we would go through a timeline and go back to that point and get a healing on that and shift perspective to collapse the paradigm that you're in at the moment and just get you to love who you are and your body and see it that it does love you. It's not against you. It doesn't hate you. It's not letting you down. It's just what you see, because you're unable to see beyond that at this point. But we all have the potential to expand our perspective beyond our truth into the truth and change things instantly.
I nearly got emotional with this.
I know. I can tell, because I'm an empath, obviously, energy, but I go to cry. So if there was, I remember one time I had a workshop, so my screen was full of women and I'm talking, and this instant lump of cry was in my throat, and I started like cracking when I was talking, and I'm like and then I had to stop it. I like, who is it? Because I'm yet to learn to control that. So I had to stop and I go, can I just ask who's very emotional, please, because it's really affecting me. She puts her hand up and she started crying. Yeah.
So I've been told in the past that I'm an empath as well. And I think I look at the way I am now, and there's still an element of empathy to me, but nowhere near as much as it used to be. And I think I've had to harden myself to protect myself from people. And like, some of those people are possibly the reasons why I hate my body, like people in my past. Is it white lighting where you do sort of learn to protect yourself from other people's emotions as an empath?
Yeah, there's different ways. It's so funny that this has actually come up in this conversation, because I do oracle card readings, new moon ones and weekly ones. And yesterday for the week was protect your energy, but do it in a way you've never done it before. It has to be different. I'm like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about it. So again, synchronicities, like I was talking about, right? I took the action to protect my energy, and now in this podcast, we're talking about it. So synchronicities, this is what I'm talking about. So this to me is just more confirmation that this is what I need to do. But there are many ways to protect your energy. It will be individual to the individual. And I was actually researching last night some jewelry that I'm going to be wearing on me, because I've actually evolved into a deeper sense of compassion for others. And I have felt that transition happen, where I felt the pain in my chest for this person. I was like, what is this? So I'm feeling myself evolve. But in doing that, I'm picking up on other people's pain and their fear. And so I'm going that extra mile to protect my energy. Yes, white lighting. Yes, visualization aids, where you might see yourself in a glass box or a glass bubble, or you might activate your personal Merkaba. There's a whole list of things you can do. Crystals and gemstones are obviously very powerful, which I'll be buying something to put on my body to help protect me, and also mantras, affirmations, things like that. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, this has gone down an avenue I didn't expect it to.
No,
but I'm very comfortable, that's for sure. It's my jam, so.
Oh, that's good. I've had someone read my aura before from a photo, and they said it was yellow.
Yeah.
Because the happiness or something, I don't know, it was a while ago, but.
Yeah, I'm not very good. The aura, I don't see, where am I going with this? I see light or dark, so okay. I'll see gray or white or black. So when black is not good for me, black is just not good, as in that person is not mentally, emotionally good. Gray is like, oh, they've just got some shit on their shoulders, they've got some monkeys on their back. And then white is very like, oh, they're sorted, they're pretty good, they work on themselves, they're connected. Yeah, so that's pretty much how I do it.
How has life changed since the explant?
It has. I'm not going to say I've got my life back. I'm going to say I have progressed and stepped forward into a new way of life, the way that I enjoy, that I have energy for, that it's easier than what it was. And the reason why I'm not going to say I got my life back, because I've evolved as a person. I have, this experience has taught me so much that I'm not that person that I was. So I am healthy again. Yeah, I have a couple of things that need critiquing and working on, like feeling a little bit tired, but that's fine. Periods need to regulate themselves, cool, whatever. But I feel great. I'm happy. I am energetic. I have a zest for life again. I have the ability to do life. And I have motivation and inspiration to be something and to do something with my life now, where before I literally couldn't care if I withered away and died. That's how bad I was. I was just like, just take me now. This is horrendous. So yeah, life is good. I'm happy and I'm different. So even I don't wear perfume anymore. I wear essential oils. This natural progression just occurred. I don't drink anymore. I've stopped drinking. And mind you, when I did drink, it was once a month. Not even that. So I've gone from 12, maybe 12 drinks a year to nothing. I am very conscious of toxins. I am changing my makeup to organic, natural makeup, which I'm ordering today, by the way. I take cold showers now to help with my immunity. I have changed and I love it. So, yeah. Life's good.
That's amazing. I remember you posting about your first workout back at the gym a few weeks ago now. Do you want to talk us through that?
Oh, my God.
I saw modified burpees in there, which is brave anyway, but let alone your first workout.
Oh, I wasn't getting down on the floor that day, tell you that much. I went from being a personal trainer for 12 years and doing – people hated my boot camps because I would do movements that were offensive. Like, literally, they told me to F off. They turned around and said, you, we're not doing that. I'm like, what's your problem? And I'm turning into a pretzel. So you got to remember, I was very, very fit and I was up for anything. And so all that happened, all BII, blah, 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 didn't move for over a year. And I come back to my, I'm like, yep, mentally, emotionally, physically, I'm ready. Go to my first workout. And I'm 10 seconds into the warm-up and I'm like, what? And I nearly started vomiting. And they're like, are you okay? And apparently the colour just drained from my face. And I'm like, what? And I was like, I can't even do this. And it was in my, it went from my tummy to my throat and it's just sitting there. And I was just trying not to vomit because once I vomit, that will be the end of me. It will just, I'll really feel nauseous for the rest of the day. And everything hurt. I was like a baby giraffe. I was wobbling. Everything was half-assed. Like it was so, what's the word? I just did everything like beginner style. You saw my push-ups. It was off a box. And even like, I didn't even get down to the box. I was just doing, like little tiny baby push-ups. It was horrendous, but I was so proud. And while I was silently dry heaving and crying a little and swearing at the trainer, on the inside, I'm like, I couldn't do this last year. I feel so grateful. I'm so blessed. I'm back at training. And I had to keep doing that to get through it rather than focusing on what was actually happening. And so I was so proud I got through the whole thing. And the feedback from everyone was that, oh, my God, at the start we thought you were out, but they saw me get up and over the mountain. And they said they saw a turning point in me where it became easy. And I said, yeah, I felt that. I felt the turning point where you just had to get through that hard part. And that's like anything in life, even the mental, emotional stuff. You've got to get through that hard part to get to the other side. You've got to keep fighting and persevering. So it was just a great metaphor for everything that I'd been going through, really. And I just used that to get me through.
How was your recovery from that first session?
I didn't walk for a week. And when I tried to go to the toilet, my hands were on the wall. Like, oh, I couldn't. I just fell. I flopped onto the toilet. Like, yeah, it was horrendous. Like a sloth. I just didn't. There was no class about me at all for the following week. That was so bad.
Have you been back like to workouts like that? Because that looked like a high intensity.
Yeah, it is. It's like, a high intensity. It's
workout, a hit. The bits that I saw of it.
Yeah, it's a hit session. So it's high intensity interval training. Yeah, I've been back every week since, except for last week because my kids both had gastro. Yeah, I've been back and I'll be back on Thursday. So every Thursday morning, that's what I do. And then I'll build up. Mm-hmm. I'll build up. I just don't want to exert my body while I'm still trying to, you know, help it heal itself. So everything in moderation right now, including exercise.
How soon was that HIIT workout after your explant?
12 weeks.
12 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you hear people talk about jumping into working out exactly 6 weeks after surgery, but you need to listen to your body. You need to.
Everyone's.
You know, it's the explant, but it's also the anesthetic that you're getting rid of through your system too. And if you reacted badly, you know, if you're not an anesthetic person, as your anaesthetist said, like 12 weeks is probably a good amount of time to wait.
You, my love, are not. That's how he said it. It was so funny. Yeah, that's true. Everyone's completely different. It's like postnatal, because I used to do Me, My Baby and I. It was a postnatal service for women, and we would use our babies as weight. Everyone's different. Not everyone's going to pop back in at 6 weeks. Not everyone's going to pop back in at 12 weeks. It's an individual experience when you are ready physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Definitely. Have you experienced detox waves at all since you've had your surgery? You mentioned headaches. I don't know whether they were sort of linked, but has a detox wave or flare-up been a thing for you?
What's a detox wave?
So for me, it was like getting really bad headaches. The only headaches I normally get are just when my neck is out. And about 3 weeks after my surgery, I had this really bad headache and like this day where my symptoms would come back and then the next day I'd be fine. People sort of talk about detox waves like it can be a day, it can be longer where your symptoms come back for a little while.
No, I don't think so. I definitely have had a headache instead of the migraine. And just the lethargic aspect of it. But, yeah, no, I don't feel like I have.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
So, yeah, no, I've been lucky.
They're not fun.
Yeah, no, I could imagine. It's just to me, that would be because the toxins are still in the body. Yeah, so to me that would just be, again, it's years of trauma. It's years of trauma on the body. So I've had mine in for nearly 17 years. So that's 17 years of trauma on my body. It's not going to take 17 days for it to completely heal. It's going to take time. Mind you, the body, and it's everyone's, let me say this too, everyone is different. I am extremely healthy. I am extremely mindful and conscious. I know the emotional side, the nutritional side, the supplementational side. I'm very all over that. And so feel like I'm giving my body a very supported environment to heal itself. Right. So I feel like
a good foundation.
Yeah. My symptoms and stuff and everything, it's going to happen quite quickly for me because I've got a good relationship with myself and I've got good knowledge around me. So, you know, compared to someone that might not be as healthy as I am, might not eat very healthy, might not drink a lot of water, might not, you know, support their body in other ways in being healthy and, nourished, it's going to take longer. Okay, so I've done detoxes. I've done since coming out. I did a detox straight away coming out the second day. I've done the sauna, the red light sauna. I'm doing the cold showers. I'm moving my body. I'm eating healthier than I ever have, like things like that. So it's going to be a quick recovery, I think you could say, compared to someone that's not doing anything.
Having that, you know, you mentioned trauma, there'd be the emotional and the physical trauma that the body and mind have gone through.
Yep.
Throughout the whole breast implant process.
Yeah. So
That probably makes sense. That probably makes sense with like in the last, so it's, I'm about 11 months post explant now. In the last 4 to 8 weeks, I haven't been feeling great. I recently found out that I had a gel bleed, but only through asking for a copy of my lab reports. So, you know, there's that physical trauma. I had mine for like a year shy of what you had, because we had our implants in the same year, had mine out last year. So there's that, all of that physical trauma. But then, you know, what we were chatting about before, about the emotional side of things, like that's possibly what's causing my, you know, inability to completely heal from it. So I feel better, but I feel like there's more of a way to go for me, and that all absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, so I guess the example that I can share is that people that hate themselves into a different version of themselves. So say I'll use the gym for example. You go to the gym, you're like, I want to achieve this result A, right? So you put in this daily effort for physical change to achieve this result within 12 weeks. But that 12 weeks comes and you've achieved your physical result. However, mentally and emotionally, you aren't happy with that result. You don't think it's worth celebrating. You want more. So then you go on another expedition and then another, and you're never satisfied and you're never happy, and whatever it is you're trying to out-train just follows you. That's why it's a holistic process. We have to work with creating change mentally and emotionally as well as physically. It works in unison. And if we neglect one, then it's going to come undone eventually. And the most interesting aspect for me is that the one that we neglect is the most powerful one out of everything that we can put focus into. The one that we choose not to do is the most powerful, most transformational, most life-changing aspect that we can participate in, and that is the mind and the way we think and the way we feel and the way we speak and act and everything. We need to address that in order to achieve sustainable change, and that when you are working on that mindset with that physical goal in unison together, they collaborate, they co-create together. Guess what? You're going to celebrate yourself at the end of that 12 weeks. Mentally, emotionally, physically, it's going to be enough, because you're not chasing anything anymore.
And that's like something that I see in people. You know, we've both worked in the fitness industry. Even through chatting with friends, there's always this, for some people, there's always this thought pattern of, I will be happier when. So I will be happier when I lose weight. And you do hear a lot from people who have lost heaps of weight and they look amazing. They're really healthy, like physically healthy, but they never did that work on their, like, their mental and emotional health. And they didn't get to that point of, oh, I'm happy now. Like, I no longer am insecure. I'm no longer worried about my partner leaving me for somebody who's more attractive, or, like, you know, whatever their thought pattern is, they haven't done the necessary work to get past that. Because, yeah, the physical transformation, sure, it can look great, but yeah, there's that other part of it that's missing for those people. So I guess that's like an example of how that might look like in that situation.
Yeah. And it's about, even with the BII and the explant surgery, it's about loving yourself into a new version of self, opposed to hating yourself into a new version of self. You're going to get two completely different outcomes. And so when you hate yourself into something else, you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve. You're going to keep chasing your tail, opposed to learning to love. Maybe don't even start there. Start at just accepting. Just accept yourself. Then from there you'll like yourself, and then from there you'll love yourself. I do believe accepting yourself is baseline. Mm-hmm. And having that acceptance and forgiveness for self will lead to self-love. And that's where we need to start with breast implants.
I think if we were to, if there was a process where people were to go through this kind of discussion and self-discovery before even getting implants in the first place, how many surgeries would go ahead? Because they'd be, yeah, getting to the root cause of why they feel that they need them and working through that and potentially not needing that to then feel accepted.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, we just got to accept ourselves and stop relying on others and circumstances to do that for us.
So thank you so much for sharing all of that. You know, it's, we, like we said, it took a few avenues that we weren't really expecting today, but I'm glad it did, because it's been some really important discussion that we've had. It's been awesome to hear about how you're going, and I would love to have you maybe on here again, you know, when you're ready to talk more about, you know, how you're feeling and what's been happening in your world. And thank you for all of the advocacy, like the articles, and, you know, it is a confronting thing to share that story, but you're doing it and changing lives by doing it. So thank you so much for joining us and for everything that you do.
Thank you, study buddy. It's been fun. Thank you for having me. Awesome. And yeah, I hope today was very helpful to anybody that listens. That's That's our main intention here.
Absolutely. I'll share Cindy's information on the show notes. So if you do want to get in touch with her about any sort of mindset work, we'll have that available to you as well.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.